President Richard Nixon once joked with Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir. He said he'd give her three U.S. generals in exchange for the legendary Moshe Dayan. Meir answered, "Sure, I'll take General Motors, General Electric, and General Dynamics." Well, today's defense industrial base is operating in a changing and uncertain economy. In the last few years, it's been hit by defense spending cutbacks. For what it means to the DIB and to the defense enterprise, I spoke with Nayantara Hensel, former chief economist for the Navy.
Well, we've seen a lot of challenges between fiscal constraints that the defense sector has been facing and shifting defense priorities. And from the perspective of the Pentagon, you're seeing a lot of challenges between building new equipment and modernizing new equipment, buying existing types of equipment, basically trying to sustain existing equipment through operations and maintenance, and also retiring older equipment, because there is this trade-off between modernization and how much that costs and keeping older equipment, trying to replace it with other stuff.
So it sounds like sustainment and maintenance types of things are really a growth industry,
ironically. Sustainability is very important for DOD. And, you know, another challenge that we're also seeing is how with the global defense industrial base, with, you know, slowdowns in GDP growth and rising gross debt as a share of GDP, for example, in the U.S. and other countries, they can look at overseas sales as an opportunity. But many of the countries that normally are leading importers have similar problems. And so it's a bit of a challenge, and that's why we're seeing a greater incentive for defense contractors to move much more towards civilian sales and also to, you know, try to come up with various projects and equipment that can work in both military areas and civilian areas.
Is that all that new, really? I mean, or is that something...
It's becoming much more necessary. For example, if you look at the top 100 global defense firms, you can see that about half of them are from the U.S., and a significant number of them are 70% or more focused on defense. So you're seeing a movement much more towards diversifying, more towards commercial, and you see that particularly with the larger defense contractors. A lot of the new equipment, types of equipment that we've been seeing DOD facing towards over the last 20 years, cybersecurity, UAVs, things like that, have both civilian and defense uses.
Yeah, so it's really the airframes and things like tanks that are exclusively military.
Exactly. And those are the ones that are challenges, especially when you look at the Army. You know, it's declined already in size as we've moved out of Iraq and Afghanistan from 590,000 down to 520,000 troops. Under the fiscal 15 budget request, we're seeing the Army dropping to between 440 and 450. And the big question is, what if full sequestration happens? And we end up dropping the Army down to 420. We've already seen much less of a demand for the ground combat vehicles. The GCV, in fact, has been terminated. And so that's been very important. What does this mean for skill sets of workers? What does this mean for the production lines? And how does that also impact various geographic areas? That's
sure.
One of the reasons why we see congressional representatives concerned. On the one hand, they want to cut defense spending to try to reduce the federal budget debt and deficit. On the other hand, they're concerned about their local areas and, you know, where are the jobs going to be? And the thing is also that when we cut back buying certain types of equipment, you know, the older generation of workers is going to retire. And it's going to be much harder to transfer the skill sets to the younger generation if later on down the road we decide, hey, we need those ground combat vehicles. You know, we're not focusing as much now on Asia Pacific, etc.
Okay, so what does that must back up into academia at some point, because you need to produce engineers and scientists that can do what is required for the military enterprise.
That's true, and also then for the civilian enterprises. But it is interesting to note that R&D is very, very important for DOD, and yet, you know, it's only been about 13% of the DOD budget in fiscal 13, 14, and now the proposed 15.
Yeah, and so I think the military leaders are aware of that. I mean, I hear them talk about the need to recapitalize and to get better at sustainment.
And there's a lot of efforts, too, on the part of defense contractors to, for example, acquire smaller firms like Boeing acquired the In-Situ Group, Frontier, and they turn out the Scan Eagle UAV. We saw in the past how Northrop Grumman bought several smaller groups, Swift Engineering, Ryan Aeronautics. But one of the things that I think is really coming to the fore is in terms of this challenge between fiscal constraints and defense priorities is what we're seeing in Ukraine. Because, you know, we're seeing a lot of the European countries that have been having slower GDP growth have now they're having to turn their attention towards increasing defense spending rather than decreasing it. Poland, Czech Republic, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia. I think that's going to have a powerful impact. I think also with the arms sanctions that we're putting on Russia, that could have implications for the defense industrial bases that are trying to export to Russia, as well as the Russian military. Case in point is the Mistral warship that France was supposed to be sending to Russia in September.
Right, yes, that was just canceled.
That was just canceled. Another example is Russia imports a lot to other countries. They're importers. They export to countries like India and so on. Well, it's no accident that India has actually not increased its defense spending for this coming year. And, you know, with the sanctions, there could be impacts on the Russian defense industrial base and also the foreign militaries that tend to purchase from Russia.
We're speaking with Nayatara Hensel. She's former chief economist for the Navy Department. So what should, what should happen in the next 10 years to kind of make sure that we can sustain older systems that are going to have to be around for a long time, while having what we're needed for future? I guess maybe the trade-off is volumes versus lethality.
That's
maybe
true.
We can't build 2,500 of anything anymore,
That's right.
Can the fewer we build be that much more effective because there's a smaller force?
Yeah, no, I think that that's a wonderful point, but there still is going to be a significant challenge, I think, for DOD, just trying to balance the modernization, the sustainment, and the R&D.
Do you think that the for what the United States now has in the arsenal and in the forces, does the blanket cover the bed, so to speak, for what is really needed to...
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, yeah. And I think that there's also a lot of good incentives that defense contractors have to try to balance some of this between overseas sales, commercial sales, domestic defense sales.
And what about the acquisition system? Can't that be kind of fixed in a way to... more bang for the buck?
The hope is that it will. I think that, using good forecasts of a lot of the construction materials is very important when we look at cost estimation. But I do think that the Better Buying Power Initiative has made a big difference. The should cost, will cost, things like that.
Yeah, they're coming out with edition 3 of Better Buying
Power shortly.
That's
right.
And that's a focus on the people, not on the process itself so much.
No, I was very involved in the first version of the Better Buying Power Initiative and should cost, will cost, and using good forecasts of economic data when we do cost estimating. Very important.
Looking at another area, we mentioned Ukraine. Let's talk about ISIL, ISIS, whatever you want to call it, the Middle East, that whole complex, which, depending on who you talk to, is a nuisance or an existential threat if we let it go on like this. What is a good approach? Do we have the resources we needed? We need to take that on now, and how's that going to look long term?
Well, I think that in general, when defense contractors are looking at overseas markets, the best opportunities are some of the Middle Eastern countries, Saudi Arabia, UAE, in the munitions area, in the ground combat vehicle area. I also think that India in the Asian area is a very good market. It continues to be so. I think that we're also seeing with China's expanding territorial ambitions in the South and East China Seas, we're seeing much more increases in defense spending for places like South Korea, Taiwan, Malaysia, Vietnam.
Sure.
So these are good markets for defense contractors.
And the Air Force Secretary Deborah Lee James mentioned, you hear this word, near peers, like Russia, China maybe more so. So the key to keeping them near and not peer, is it quantity, is it technology, or is it a combination of both?
It's a combination, I think, of both. I think that's a very good point.